I'm Shane Hewitt, guest hosting here on The Rush. Time for smart speakers, smart people talking about things. And if we want smart people on the radio, that means I step aside and let other people do it. It's kind of the way this goes. Joining us today for this conversation is Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms. Hello, Aaron. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Shane.
So Matt Gurney is also here, journalist and co-founder of The Line Online Magazine, and I have a secret to share about Matt Gurney. Matt, you ready?
Probably not, but we might as well just get to it.
It's a good one. We had Charles Adler on Monday, and his pontificating, inspired by your pontificating on Twitter and with your The Line Online Magazine Substack, isn't it? Yeah.
It is.
And so that's a great place to go to find guys like Matt Gurney. So you inspired all of that. Credit to you. Well done.
You know what? The exciting thing is going to be to find out who we can inspire next.
See, that's what we're talking about here. My guy, Matt. Okay, Aaron, Matt, smart speakers topics. We've got a few of them here. We want to dig into it. I'm just filling in. I'm the new guy, so you know these voices. And I wanted to start with I received it as an email, and it surprised me a little bit, and I thought it was politically a really great sidestep, and I look for your correction if it's wrong. It's kind of like, I'm not a liar, you're a liar, I'm not wrong, you're wrong. I feel like that's kind of what's going on, but Trudeau has challenged it, and probably a good move. Trudeau challenged premiers who are opposed to the carbon tax to suggest an alternative. I'm not sure that that's their job when it's his tax, but let's get started there, Aaron.
It's like it's so close yet so far for Justin Trudeau. I think at the heart of his argument is something real and really important. If you do not believe that a price on carbon is the way to reduce emissions, then show us another credible plan to do so. I think that this problem is going to plague Pierre Poilievre going into the next election. So far, his axe the tax has been a great slogan. It's harnessing anger for sure. It's helping to harness some vote intention for him as well. But at some point, I think serious voters who are done with Justin Trudeau are going to take a hard look at the alternatives. Is it going to be Pierre Poilievre? Are they going to park their vote with Jagmeet Singh and the NDP? And I think voters are going to want to see more than just a slogan. They want to know that you have a credible plan for the environment. And I think really that's what was at the heart of what Trudeau sent to the premiers. Unfortunately, for me, it came off a little bit of petty posturing. It came off political. He didn't come off like a prime minister. And so. I think for whatever good he tried to do with that letter, I think he undermined his own effort.
I know you are, but what am I is never a good argument to get yourself into. And so to Aaron's point, Matt, that it's challenging. Okay, big fella, what are your great ideas to his rival across the hall is probably a good step. But when you're going into an election and you're going, okay, if you don't like how I'm doing it, how would you do it better is probably not a great question to ask because I'm not sure you want to know the answer.
Well, I think the answer, and I'm kind of a bit heterodox in this, I actually like the idea of the carbon tax. I think the carbon tax is an efficient way of handling a problem if we choose to handle it. The problem is, and I think this is something that underlies a lot of our politics, is that Canadians care about climate change in theory. They don't really care that much about it. And polls will all, like, there was this great combination of polls a couple of years ago where it was like, how much do you care about like climate change as an important national issue? And it was like sky high. It was like super majority levels of support. Yes, we are worried about climate change. And it was Ipsos, if I remember poll this correctly. And then they started to build in hypotheticals. So it's like, okay, so to stop climate change, are you willing to spend like 10 bucks a year, 20 bucks a year, 50 bucks a year, 100 bucks a year? And after about 200 bucks a year, support for doing anything absolutely tanked. So what we have with climate change is an issue where Canadians believe two things simultaneously, that it poses a direct existential threat to human civilization as we know it, and that it's not worth 200 bucks to stop. So in terms of like a guy like Poilievre coming up and going, we're going to axe the tax, we're going to cut it, we're going to give you money back, and we're going to work on like vague promises like technology or carbon capture. capture or something. I honestly believe that there's a lot of Canadians out there, especially right now, who will go for that. And I do know that there is this conventional wisdom that Canadians care a lot about the environment. I think Canadians care a lot about the environment when they're not freaked out about the cost of groceries, the cost of the home heating, the cost of housing itself, the accessibility of healthcare, geopolitical problems, public safety in their own communities. I want to be clear, guys. I'm not endorsing this. I think this is short-sighted. I do take climate change seriously, but I think in terms of it being a political winner for the prime minister, it's a dead issue. And to be honest, I think he killed it. When he carved out that exemption for Atlantic Canada, he took his own signature policy out roundside the barn and shot it.
Yeah, and I don't think that this conversation asking for help is helps that whole carve-out for the Maritimes either. I mean, that's a big thing. Fundamentally, one thing happens with people is people have values, and we live into values. The number one core value that we carry is don't die. And so we get to this point, and it's been proven over and over again. It's where wars come from. It's where the ugliest things in humanity happen. We carry values until fear kicks in. And I think that's the threshold that's being chatted about here, Aaron, is that there's got to be an efficiency. There's got to be you have to have an end goal of where efficiency happens and somehow message that across Canada and not push it too far. Like Matt said, I agree with Matt on that part about just going too far.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I agree with Matt on that part too. I mean, I guess the question is, show us what you're delivering, not just what you expect us to pay, not just what the input is. Show us the output. Show us what we get out of this. And yeah. I think that might be what's missing, kind of on all sides here. But I think it's certainly what the federal government's missing. And I agree with you entirely. The moment they do a carve out, they're basically saying, this is our top priority. Just jokes. It's not actually our top priority. We have other things. Don't worry about it. So I think with their carve out, they've ended their moral high ground here.
Ooh, good point. Matt, do you think it's the death nail for the carbon tax generally, or at least this direction of the carbon tax?
That's a great question. I mean, look, I think the actual death knell of it will be like the first signature on an order paper signed by newly installed Prime Minister Pierre Poilievre. That'll be the death knell. The sound of pen on paper will be the death knell. Until that point, I do think, at least in theory, the Liberals will continue to have some carbon taxation component or some price on pollution, as they're going to try to call it. They're also going to try and talk up the rebates, which is part of the messaging that they have just completely botched, and I find that weird. I don't know how the government screwed up the we will send you money part of the plan. Like, they didn't message that part well, which is just inexplicable to me. But overall, is it the death knell of the plan? No, the death knell will be when Prime Minister Poilievre kills it. But in the meantime, I think we're mixing metaphors a bit here. It's going to be an anchor around the Prime Minister's neck. Like, he no longer has a coherent position he's able to defend. There's a reason the premiers have jumped all over it, right? It's not some newfound opposition to the tax or skepticism about climate change. It's political opportunity.
Yeah, and I, how did it get to the point where when the check arrives, nobody cares and no one's excited about it? It's just, it's like, oh, right, I get money today because I paid my taxes on time. And then, not to mention, there's that whole piece of if you don't pay your taxes, you don't even know, you don't even get to find out. I get it. You own the government money, but you don't even get to find out what the benefit that returns on this is just because you're in default on your taxes for whatever reason that might be, Aaron. That, to me, also seems like a PR failure.
Yeah, I mean, I do think people should pay their taxes. So I'm not going to have a lot of sympathy for somebody who's not getting their carbon rebate checks because they didn't pay their taxes. But I do think that Matt's right. The government has botched the upside to this plan, which is right now 90% of Canadians get more back from the carbon rebate than they pay in carbon tax, according to the Smart People's calculations, which means in theory that when Pierre Poilievre, should he become prime minister, rips up the carbon levy, what he's doing is actually taking money out of people's pockets, not putting money into people's pockets. And that message is so lost. We're not hearing it from Justin Trudeau, certainly. And I just don't think it's out there in the world in terms of people saying, yeah, I don't mind the carbon tax because, you know, actually my rebate checks are pretty rich. I have yet to hear a person say that, even though it's true.
Yeah. Also, to add to that, when someone's filling up for gas, they're going, I'm okay with this price because I'm going to get the money back in a couple of months. I don't hear that conversation happening either. Matt Gurney is here. Aaron Morrison is here. It's Smart Speakers on the Rush. I'm Shane Hewitt. Coming up, Renter's Bill of Rights is something that's been proposed. That's interesting to me. I've heard highlights only, but there are some things that sound really, really cool with it. There are some things that, question mark for me. Plus, I'm going to throw at our Smart Speakers a conversation around Ozempic coming up in a bit. It is time for Smart Speakers, smart people talking about important topics. I'm Shane Hewitt, guest host. Our guests for Smart Speakers include Matt Gurney, journalist and co-founder of The Line online magazine. Find the Substack, get to it, and subscribe to it, by the way. Matt will send you an email and say good morning to you, which is nice. Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms, in the conversation as well. The Prime Minister has proposed a renter's bill of rights. This is only a little tidbit of it, but I wanted you to hear it.
It would create a nationwide standard for lease agreements, give renters a clear history of apartment pricing so they can bargain fairly, and make sure they have more agency.
More agency in negotiating for a rental space. Matt Gurney, the first word on this. Those three tidbits alone sound very appealing from the perspective of a renter.
Yeah, I bet they do. I don't see any problem with this. And I know that sounds kind of like vague or damning with faint praise. Like, this is probably the sort of thing politically they should have been talking about 2 years ago. If they were, they might not be down by 18 points. This is probably a little bit of fixing the barn door now that the horses have actually not only escaped, but they've roamed the entire prairie. Like, the horses are long gone on this one. But I honestly don't know. And I will defer to either of you if you do know this. I don't think this is federal jurisdiction. I'm not actually sure what the feds are going to do here. And it's, again, probably good politics and probably good policy. On the merits, I think this is probably a good idea. But I just don't know what the feds are going to do about this. And I just find it interesting because there's been this real battle lately going on where they're, and we touch on it actually before the break, a little bit about the carbon tax, right? Feds versus premiers, battles about jurisdiction, things like that. This seems to me like a reach of the feds into the provincial jurisdiction. And look, for the Prime Minister, I'm sure he would rather talk about this and a bunch of other things. I just honestly don't know how it's going to work. And I'm always skeptical of this Prime Minister in particular and his party, because they're very, very good at announcements and they're very, very bad at follow through. And this seems to me to be something that will probably shape up that way. But I do have an open mind to it. If there is a way that they can make it work, let's see them do it.
Now, the Ontario Real Estate Association, my understanding is that's the purview, is to maintain standards across Ontario of how real estate works, rules about collecting money, that you've got to put money into trust and all those bits and pieces. Happy to be corrected if I'm wrong with that one, Aaron. A reach response to what Matt said.
I think that Justin Trudeau is showing up to a blazing fire with a little water pistol here. Housing is a real serious problem. Rental housing is absolutely out of control. I don't necessarily oppose what he's proposing with this, his new renter's bill of rights. It's a term that's been passed around both provincially and federally for a long time amongst various parties. I just don't think it's strong enough. And I think Matt's right that he might have some jurisdictional issues here. Really, what this is intended to do, if we are to take the Prime Minister at his word, is give you transparency. And he thinks transparency is going to give you bargaining power. But knowing that you are being ripped off does not stop you from being ripped off when the vacancy rate is at 1%. Where are you going to go, right?
That's such a good point. And not to mention, Matt, that having bargaining power and knowing how much everything else rented for from people who did not have bargaining power does not give you a cheaper price, right? If someone in your neighborhood sells their house for $2 million, great for them, but that does affect everybody else. And when they're looking for comparables, they're going to go, well, that one was 2 million. That's one of the flaws of the real estate scenario, in my view, across Canada. And that just seems to perpetuate the exact same problem of this very gray, subjective evaluation of what it is.
Look, as intrepid producer Ben Harrison could confirm, something I am known for is my relentless optimism and cheerfulness. Like, my smile can light up a room, and I'm completely lying. None of that is true. When Aaron said a minute ago that, like, the prime minister is showing up with, like, a little, like, a squirt gun at, like, a blazing fire, she's right, but I'm actually going to go a bit further. It's not a fire. It is the aftermath of a nuclear detonation. It's a radioactive crater, and everyone 80 miles downwind is dead. This is the problem we actually, and I say this like a little bit tongue in cheek because I want to make good radio, but also, like, very seriously, let's be extremely honest about this. There is no solution to the housing crisis on less than probably a decadal timescale here. Even if we do everything right, it's going to take 5 to 10 years to begin turning this around, and probably an extra 10 to 15 years to actually bring affordability back into the market for exactly, Shane, the reason you were just saying ago. Everybody now has psychologically locked in on what their market comparables are for their neighborhood. No one's going to want to sell for less than Jim down the road sold for. And until there is enough actual rental inventory out there to give would-be renters actual leverage, no one's going to drop their rents here. There's just no reason for them to. I'm an optimist in the long term. These are fixable problems, but I'm not a medium term optimist. So to Aaron's point, let's all get out our squirt guns. Like, hey, I mean, a water fight's fun on its own merits, but in terms of actually turning this thing around, in especially in a time frame that might suit the prime minister before the next election, no, that ship sailed and then it sank.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's be honest. It is a subjective pricing market based on demand and interpretation, with commission salespeople dictating the prices. So they make more money the more this goes up. Aaron, you look like you wanted to say something quick.
Yeah, you know what? The leaving the market to govern the market is obviously not working for us. We have a problem. Supply is definitely part of it. There's no doubt. We have to build more purpose-built rentals. We have to build more missing middle housing for people to buy. But there are things we can do, and there are things that governments can do right now to make a big difference. I'm not buying the there's no short-term solution. Sorry, Matt. But I mean, we've got proposals coming out of Queen's Park from Mark Stiles and the official opposition, like rent control that stays with the unit. Get rid of the incentive to evict somebody and jack the rent up. We don't need transparency on what the rent used to be if we had rent control that stays with the unit. For that matter, rent control that covers all units, because Doug Ford exempted a whole bunch of them when he became premier. So there's federal proposals as well. We got to deal with foreign investment. There's lots we can do immediately.
A personal question here on Smart Speakers, Matt Gurney, Aaron Morrison. We only have 30 seconds, so it's got to be quick. Does anybody in your life take Ozempic, Matt, that you know of? You as comfortable as you are sharing, do you know anybody who takes Ozempic?
Yeah, I do. In my immediate family, and someone who actually has been using it for years to treat a diagnosed medical issue. And I take obesity seriously. Like, I get it. Like, I if we have wonder drugs to actually tame obesity, I'm all on board with it. But my own family has had to deal with the disruption of supply that the recent swing to Ozempic has caused. It's not easy.
It's not easy. Okay, Aaron, just quickly, you have people around you that have taken it? Yeah, no.
Yeah, I do. And I agree with Matt Gurney, folks with diabetes come first, but also let's think of real obesity as a health issue. It's not just to look good, it's good for your health.
Well, it turns out when you take a food and appetite suppressant and you put it on the marketplace, people buy less groceries. And that's where the next conversation with Dr. Sylvain Charlebois starts, coming up here on The Rush. I'm guest host Shane Hewitt.